Page 896, Paragimel Pasuk Ches. Paragimel Pasuk Ches. We are in the middle of learning about robbing Hashem. We discussed yesterday the four words for theft: Gneva, Gezela, Oishek, and now we have a new term called Kuf Beizayin Hayikbah Koveya. I'm not sure how you say this. Koveya, Koiva, Koiva. I'm not sure how you pronounce it in its shortest form. Kuf Beis Ayin. Okay, the word is used here in the various binyanim. There's Hayikba, Kovim, and Kivanucha. How do you pronounce the word? It's bare bones.
What does our Hebraic suggest?
Kuf Beis Ayin. Kova, Kova. Kova?
Kovea.
Kovea? Kovea, okay. Kovea. Kovea. Kovea.
Yeah.
It means to rob. So actually, we learn many translations. We learn the Betsudos, we learn Rashi, we learn the Targum. The Targum says Hayir Gaze, Hayar Gaze. Yar Gaze, which I'm assuming it means Rogez. Rogez means anger.
Well, or to provoke.
To provoke. Do you think you're going to provoke a Kadosh Baruch Hu? Do you think that has to be defined better? What exactly the Targum means to say? Are you attempting to anger Hashem, to provoke Hashem by denying the Kohanim and the Levim their entitlements? Is that what it means to say? Maybe. Okay, we did all the farce. Let's take a look over here at the Likutei Shas. That's the only thing we did not do in this pasuk. On page 896 on the bottom. 896 in the very bottom of the page, Yikba Adam Elokim. Levi Ikla Lohu Gashri, he went to visit a certain location. Also Gavalukame Amalei Kivaan Palanya. So he actually did not know what that word means. Okay, they were talking in a language that he was not familiar with. That this person robbed me. Sorry? You look very different. What do you do, Mayor? What do you do? You took a haircut?
Got a shower, took a haircut.
A new man.
Haircut.
A new man, huh? Well, last night you didn't have a haircut. I guess this morning, huh?
I see you.
On the screen.
No, I wasn't on the screen.
You're on the screen. Okay, you look totally different.
It's a virtual haircut.
Okay, so Hayikba Avolei Kivaan Planya. So they said to him that this Percy Ploni, he is guilty of the crime called Kuf Beis Ayin Nun. Lohavi Yoda Lohavin Ma'akom Alei. Levi did not know what he was saying, which is shocking because it's a pasuk in Malachi, and we assume that the Nevi'im and the Tanaim and the Meroyim, they knew Tanakh better than we know what the back of our hand looks like. They were fluent. The Chofetz Chaim, his fluency in Tanakh is frightening. If you learn Sefer Chofetz Chaim, or you learn the different the Kol Kisei Chofetz Chaim. There's a collection of many small kuntresim. Many Chofetz Chaim was prolific. People don't know. They didn't just write the Mishnah Berurah with the Bir Halacha and the Shaar HaTzion. The Chofetz Chaim, and they didn't just write Sefer Chofetz Chaim. He wrote a whole collection of svarim, the kuntresim, different types of musa svarim, and all collected in a multi-volume set called Kol Kisei Chofetz Chaim. In fact, people take the dershu exams, so they actually that's part of the dershu. We take on the Mishnah Berurah. So part of the Mishnah Berurah is you have to also answer a few questions from the Seder Halim, they're learning from the Kisei Chofetz Chaim. And you can't go more than 2-3 lines in the Sefer Chofetz Chaim or in this other Svarim where he quotes out of nowhere a pasuk in Tanakh with precision, not just, you know, precision. And it's shocking. Like the fluency of Tanakh, it's just unreal. And, you know, that's not what he's known for.
No, but you don't realize what they...
The Chofetz Chaim, all of the lomdis of Reb Chaim, All the lamdas of all the biggest lamdanim in Klal Yisrael can be found in the Biur Halacha, the Be'er Halacha, the book says the Be'er Halacha in Mishneh Berurah. Everyone reads the Mishneh Berurah. The Mishneh Berurah, that's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. And then go take a look at the Be'er Halacha, where he explains the lamdas and his machadesh, incredible yisodas in Halacha. And in those sections of Be'er Halacha, you can find every svara of Rav Chaim, Chaim Halevi, all the brisk alumnus, and all the bekiyas and shas and poiskim, it's all there. And the Shar HaTzion, what he has there, the golden nuggets that you find on the bottom of the page, is beyond belief what you can find there in a few words. And with all that, his humility that he put on the page, the Be'er Hetev. Today, if anyone today would write a sefer, would they even Cholom Zach, would even dream of putting on the page, reprinting the Be'er Hetev? The Be'er Hetev, the Shulchan Aruch of the Ramah, okay, he's commenting on the Shulchan Aruch of the Ramah, but he puts the Be'er Hetev on the page.
That was the old time Shulchan Aruch
that. Right. And it's like, no, but that's not what he's writing. He's not cross. He doesn't put any Haggois in the Be'er Hetev. Today, if someone would on without, let's say it was no Mishnah Berurah, someone would come along and try to copy to do that, they would write comments on the Mechaber and the Ramah. Why would they put on the page the Be'er Hetev? what do they gain to reprint someone else's sefer? If you want to refer to it, put a footnote, you'll access in the Shar HaTzion, you'll tell you, go look in the Be'er Hetev.
That was the Seder Ali with the Be'er Hetev.
Okay, could be, but yeah. it's still an incredible.
It
put the Be'er Hetev.
Many years ago, it was the Shulchan Aruch in the Be'er Hetev.
Okay, yeah, that's what he did. It's an incredible act of humility, yeah. And his fluency it's unbelievable. So here, when you see that Levi did not know what the word meant, it's a little bit shocking. Levi couldn't figure out that the answer is going to come from Pasuk over here in Malachi. This needs more Be'er what it means. He said Amale. So I don't know what it means. I don't know. Lo yahave yoda ma kamale. On the second line now, page 896 in the Likudishas.
The Seder HaLimud originally for children, we don't follow it now. Right away, we're right into the Gemara or the Kama, right. Whatever it is. The Seder HaLimud went through all of Chumash,
went
through all of Tanakh, and then start Gemara.
What's what it is?
The Zilberstein. Israel, they had the some places.
The Zilberstein method. The Zilberstein, they have an Eretz Yisrael, it's very popular, where they have a whole different chinuch, a whole different
Seder Limud.
That's the original. And I know my brother actually was very strongly considering putting his kids in they had a Zilberstein yeshiva in where he lived. I think the only reason why he didn't do it was because it was at that time, his kids are very big now, it was a small yeshiva. And they really didn't have the resources that the other yeshivas had. The classic traditional yeshivas, you know, they're very well established, they're very big, they're relatively speaking well funded, and they have big classes, and they have resource rooms, and they have this, and they have this. And the Zilberstein yeshiva then was very a small mom and pop shop. So it wasn't, they didn't have the support system. Now, I don't know now, maybe by now, I have no idea, maybe by now it's more popular. But then I spoke about this, and he told me not everyone is matzliach in that system. He said, you need a sir, you have to be a very big mumche to know which child would thrive in the Zilberstein system, and which child would thrive in the traditional type, in the classic yeshivas. Each child is different. Everyone is different. So there are certain advantages. Listen, this is the way it's being done for generations. It must be there's something that works about it. The new system, even though it's not what it says in the Mishnayos. You're supposed to learn until 5 years old. You learn Mikra, and then you first start learning Gemara when you're probably like after Bar Mitzvah, something like that. 15 years old.
Yeah.
It's an entirely different system. For some people they thrive. For some children it doesn't. Whatever. Everyone is different. They eat different strokes for different folks.
We've discussed this many times
right.
In the past.
So here we're dealing with fluency in Tanakh. This is a great example. So also he went show Bei Midrash. He went to the Beis Medrash. Amrule, they said to the lady Gizolan in the Amalach. So they told him it means a gazelle. This is mamshu, a piece of Gemara. This is Gemara. It means gazela. But hayikba is related to theft. and they were telling you that this person was a ganav, he was a gazlan, he stole. Omaloch, that's what they were saying to you. When this fellow said Kirva'an Palanya, in essence, he was saying is that so-and-so is a gazlan. How do you know that? That's what it means. Dichsiv, it says in the pasuk, this pasuk right here. Hayikba Adam Elokim. Okay, Omar Le Rav Mibarnish, Rav Ashi, Yehava Hasim, Hava Minale. If I was there, I would have said to this fellow, Heichi Kiva'och, B'mai Kiva'och, V'amai Kiva'och, U'memela Havi Yod'ino. It's an incredible piece of Gemara. I would ask, if you don't know what the word means, so play along. Play along and ask, this person did this to me. So just say, how did he do it? What did he do? Why did he do it? And when you'll get an answer, then you'll very quickly figure out what the word means. Play along. Don't promote your ignorance. Don't let people know that you're an ignoramus. So you don't know what this word means. Like they say, better keep your mouth shut and let people think you're a fool, then open it and remove all doubt. You ever hear that expression? You ever hear that expression? So just play along. Umeil have yadana. The ihu levi sava milsa di isura ka'amale. So levi, that's not a good idea. Because maybe when it says the word kiva'an, planya, what it means is that this person, he did something inappropriate to me regarding arayos. He touched me. He abused me. Okay, some type of abuse. Okay, I'm not going to say the graphic terms in society enough to lower our level, ourselves to their level. But maybe he actually abused me in the world of arayos. If I'm going to say, how did he do it? Oh, you want me to demonstrate what he did? You want me to demonstrate? Why did he do it? Because, if this relates to arayos, it would be a tremendous bezoyon and chil Hashem, if you would ask these questions. Now, this Gemara really is off the charts. This Gemara is off the charts in so many respects. Number one is, how could it happen that a lady did not know what the word meant? It's a pasuk. Hayikba Adam Elokim. I mean, Levi is not from the 21st century. Levi is certainly new to Tanakh and the Sinaites. What's going on over here? And number two, isn't it Goynev Das Habriyos when the person says, when the other person says, or the other way, if I was there, Amalei Rav Mi Bar Nish, Travash, if I was there, I would have just made believe that I know what you're talking about and just ask some questions and participate in the conversation and I'll end up figuring it out. Isn't that Goyne Das Habriyos? If you don't know what something means and make believe you do know what it means, this is Gnevas Das. It's Gnevas Das. So how can you, maybe for the average person, all right, so you'll play along, but for a Talmud Chacham, a person who is the Gaptu, a person of stature, if he'll slip up and people are going to see that you really don't know what you're talking about and you're going to Das Habriyos, it will result in an awesome Chilul Hashem. You're taking a very big risk. By playing along, it could be a very big Chilul Hashem. And when Levi responded, when he finally responded, he said so-and-so, he went and I thought maybe he was referring to that he committed a crime of abuse, okay, sexual abuse. That's what he was referring to over here. What does that mean? Are you really obligated to, when someone makes an accusation, are you really obligated to make an assumption that that's possibly what happened? We look at people in the Daf Yomi yesterday. The Gemara talks about when an animal has been, someone steps on a bird. And the halacha is that a person steps on the bird, so you have to wait 24 hours because maybe the bird it's a treifa. Risuk evar. Maybe some of the bones, some of the limbs have been pulled out of their socket. The Gemara says that if the bird survives for 24 hours, that's a simen muvok, that the bird is A-OK, and then you can shecht it. And then the Gemara says, can you shecht it on Yom Tov? Because even though it's true, it did survive for 24 hours, maybe when you'll do a bedikah, you'll do the shrit and you'll inspect the inside of the animal, you may find that it's a treifa because of this accident, because of the trauma that it suffered. So the Gemara, and Rashi here asked the question, how about shechting an animal? An animal, the halach is you're allowed to shecht an animal on Yom Tov. And Rashi says, we always do a bedikah on an animal. It seems from Rashi that birds, they did not do bedikahs. That's what Rashi seems to be saying. In Tan Chazal, when a person did a shechita on a bird, they did not do a bedikah. Today we do. Today the factories, the empire, I saw myself, they do a bedikah. I think the only thing they really check in America is they check the intestines. They check the intestines, and it could be the only reason why they check the intestines. They told us why. Even that they do not need to do. It's because the law is that they're not allowed to feed the birds for 24 hours prior to shechita. That's the law in America. We're not allowed because the food was not yet fully digested in its stomach, in its intestines, and it turns into schmutz, bacteria, and if it's not properly cleaned, it can lead to illness. So in order to prevent the spread of disease in America, they starve all birds, poultry, are starved for 24 hours, so there should be no food in its intestine, in its GI tract, so that will diminish the possibility of disease spreading. So what happens? So it may be good for us, but the birds, could you imagine if we don't eat for 24 hours, we go out of our minds. Could you imagine chicken that you're eating for dinner? That bird, not only did it give up its life for you to have dinner, it fasted at a tinus for 24 hours before its mamish tsar bali chayim. It's unbelievable. And we allow this. Mamish tsar bali chayim. When you eat a piece of chicken, the chicken was starved for 24 hours prior to shechita. And that's extremely painful for that bird. And what happens when it's waiting in the crates to be slaughtered? It's literally starving. And in desperation, it'll eat anything you can find. It'll eat the feathers off its fellow bird. It will eat pebbles. And they often find in the intestines pebbles. The birds, in desperation, they eat pebbles. And those pebbles puncture the stomach. They puncture the intestines. So therefore, in all of the factories, at least in empire, in Boydek, he runs his hand down the entire intestine to make sure there are no pebbles. And if there's a pebble, right away they inspect to make sure that there's no nekev. So in the time of Chazal, they did not starve the birds for 24 hours. So it was very unlikely to find a pebble. So they didn't bother doing any bedikah whatsoever. But animals, they did, Rashi says. They checked for sirchus. They checked for the lungs, the adhesions, the reading in the lungs. So Rashi asked the question, so why are you allowed to shecht it? Well, how come the Gemara never presents a question about shechting a bird, an animal, on Yom Tov? You have to do a bedikah, and you may discover the animal is not kosher. And then it turns out that retroactively you do machalol Yom Tov for no reason. So Rashi says, we go basar roiv. And since most animals are not treifos, so therefore there's nothing to worry about. Even though we do a bedikah as a chumrah, but you're allowed the chatchila to shecht an animal on Yom Tov, even though you will do a bedikah, the bedikah is just a hidur, it's not an ikar hadin. But by a bird that has suffered an accident, was gone through some type of, was pushed around, there the bedikah is me'ikar hadin, and there's a real 50-50 chance that the bird will be a treifa. And therefore, that's why the Gemara asks the question, how are you allowed, can we shech such a bird on Yom Tov? But an animal is not a problem because we go basarai. So I'm asking the question, if a person makes a statement to you, and he says, this person committed a crime against me. So according to Levi was charged. Why didn't you just play along and say, how did he commit this crime? Why did he commit this crime? Why didn't you just play along? So Levi said, I was afraid maybe the crime that was committed was sexual harassment. And then if I'm going to say, how did he do it? Oh, you want a demonstration? It would be a disgusting thing to say. Wait a minute. What are the statistics? Go to the police department and ask them, when a person comes to the police department and files a claim, are most of the cases that are filed in the police department sexual harassment cases? I don't think so. They're not. So most cases, when someone says they committed a crime against you, the roiv is mominus, dine mominus. So then the question that he would ask, would it be appropriate? So why was Levi chayish lemiuta? Levi over here is saying, I didn't want to ask those questions to play along because it would be a very embarrassing thing to say. Excuse me, what are the chances? What are the chances? I'm assuming the chances are less than 50%. I think most cases today in society, even though we live in a society of promiscuity, but there is definitely, I think the statistics certainly are, most crimes committed are related to either physical harm or money, not necessarily what he's concerned about. Yet, obviously, Levi, it's a very interesting insight into the human condition and the halacha. Levi felt that the chances of it being something along those lines was significant enough that he, and especially maybe his stature, being a Talmud Chacham, there would have been a Chilul Hashem. It would have been a Chilul Hashem to ask such a question. And likewise, it would have been a Chilul Hashem. And it's what about being Goyne of Das Habri, and he didn't want to say that he did not know to play along. Also, that's the issue of being Goyne of Das Habri. You're making believe. Okay, I don't know. There's always the classic question when a person, let's say he goes to visit someone in the hospital. Today, unfortunately, you can't even go to the hospital. Even though I went not that long ago to visit someone. They let us go. But you go to the hospital, and then you discover when you're in the hospital, you're in the lobby, and who do you, you see something, you know, what are you doing here? I'm visiting so-and-so. Oh, so-and-so is in the hospital. I didn't know he was in the hospital. No, once I'm here already, let me go and visit him also. So you go visit, you came to visit Reuven. And when you're in the lobby, you meet your friend and you discover that Shimon is also in the hospital. So you go to visit Shimon. You walk into the room and Shimon says, I can't believe it. I can't believe you went out of your way to come visit me. I didn't come visit you. I came to visit Reuven. So what is the halacha? What are you supposed to do? So the halacha is, you're supposed to just keep your mouth shut. If you think that I came to visit you, so good. I don't have to go. I don't have to go and tell you.
He fooled himself.
Exactly. The Lashon L'Gemara. Very good. You know the Lashon L'Gemara. Is Ihu de Itiya Nafshe. The patient, he fooled himself. You have no obligation to reveal to Shimon that I came, did not come. You, Shimon, I would never come to see you. Never. It's just that I happened to be here, so new I came into. That's even worse. That's very insulting, right? That's very insulting. So you just be quiet. If he thinks you came to visit him, you're not obligated. You shouldn't say anything because you shouldn't make him feel bad. Let him think whatever he wants to think. So here they asked him a question. They said to him, Levi, you know what happened? That this person, kiva'an planya. And Levi has no idea what this word means. And I would assume that it would be a chil Hashem if Levi would not know what the word means, because after all, it is a pasuk in Tanakh. So Levi, so what should Levi do? Levi kept quiet. Levi did the smartest thing. I mean, he kept quiet. He just didn't say anything. So what was the person thinking? We don't know what he was thinking. Either think he was thinking that Levi doesn't know what I'm talking about, he doesn't know what the word means, that's a possibility, or Levi doesn't care, or Levi is trying to find a solution. He's absorbing what has taken place, he's in shock, and he's processing the information. The person who made the statement, they are full, they let their minds get busy and try to figure out what Levi is thinking.
What about
Not. He comes to the Beis Medrash. He says, "Is there a Beis Medrash in town?" He goes to the closest Beis Medrash and he asks, "He's not a Beis Medrash. What does it mean?" He walks into the Beis Medrash and he tells him, "I don't know. Someone said this. I don't know what it means." He wasn't embarrassed.
Maybe he just didn't know. In other words, he understood it, but not on as deeply as he would have liked to understand it, because it didn't make enough sense. I always remember that, you know, when I was a kid and I asked the question, the Rebbe said, "Oh, the Vilna Gaon asked the same question, wonderful." But then he explained it to the whole Shia, and I knew right then, you know, I said, "Well, we asked it for different reasons. I just thought it was strange, and the Vilna Gaon did it because he knew Shas, and this was a problem." Okay. We didn't have the same agenda.
A person doesn't have to show that his ignorance.
You don't have to show, right.
You know, there's a famous case where a person, Godol, one of the Gedolim, visited the town, even though the Shabbos morning they asked to make Kiddush. So he didn't know the meaning of the town. So he said, "Marei Pri HaGafen," and he looked around, someone was drinking. "Oh, you know, I hear from here already that you don't have to say anymore."
That's a very good story, right, exactly. This little piece of Gemara opens up so many issues. It opens up, first of all, how Taka did he not know what the word mean? How did he not know what, how could it possibly be? He doesn't know Tanakh. That's an issue. Number two is, how could Rav Mibarnish say to him, let's play along with that. Isn't that Goynev Das Habrios? And the third question over here, when his response is, "I didn't want to play along with this because I thought maybe it possibly means sexual abuse." Are you really in halacha obligated to take that into consideration? Are you obligated to take into consideration the very lowest, the lowest of society? Is that really la halacha when there's something goes wrong? You have to assume the very, very worst. I don't have any answers. I'm just asking questions. These are all major issues over here in this piece of the Gemara. Goyev Das Abrius, Rav Sperling, Rav Nachum, Shalom Aleichem, welcome. Last time I saw you, we're on the stage. You are on the stage, you're in the spotlight of Chaim Berlin, holding the Sefer Torah, holding many Sefer Torah. Rav Sperling is the Gabbai of Chaim Berlin on Simchas Torah. There were about at least 1,000 people there. No one was wearing a mask. Either were you, me, and it was a very intense Lamedica event. And Rav Sperling is the Gabbai. He calls the shots. I was very impressed.
What did he shoot?
What? Okay, let's go further. Amoy lumoy to the meinotam. Amoy number 6, number chazal, page 896. Over here, 4 lines down. Amoy lumoy of mohin. Bashliya, see, it's very relative. This is we discussed this yesterday. All the laws of Shemitah, Shavias, do the nations of Amun above, do they have sanctity like Eretz Yisrael? That you have to be Nizr in the Paris of Shavias. They said, "What are you talking about? Amun above is not part of Eretz Yisrael." So the answer is, Chazal will goizer that even the neighboring lands as a Chumrah also should observe the laws of Shavias as a Chumrah in order. As an extension, just like you have when it comes to Trumais to Maestros. In Bavel, there is a halacha that you're obligated to separate Trumais to Maestros. Now, in America, you've never ever seen anyone separate Trumais to Maestros in America. Why not? If Chazal were going there to separate Trumais to Maestros in Bavel, so why not in America? I mean, that means Chutz Laretz. The answer is no. It was only in Bavel. It's a very interesting idea, is that there were certain lands where the Jewish people found themselves after the Churban, and they only enacted that Chumrah should be done in those specific countries, in those specific lands. And if Jews find themselves in other countries later in history, they have no, it's not a din chutz laretz, it's a din in the land itself, in a particular location, a particular country. Shumas and Maestros were separated. Also, I think in Amun Amayv also, there's a Mishnais. I forget there's a Mishnais all about this topic. But let's go there. Amun Amayv Mamoyas Mishvias, Gozer Bitafen Shayidnu Maestro Oni. So he says, the Gemara wants, this type of reference is the Mishnah referring to him, Sechtu Yadayim. It's a very beautiful Mishnah. So the Gemara wants to say, let's compare Shvias to meiser ani. In other words, what do you do in what do you do in year number three and six? So ordinarily you give meiser ani. What's the expense? The Gaza Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Shayit meiser shein. What do you do in year three? Oh no, that wait, this is the year in Shemitah. Is this the year? So the shaila over here is a little. Let's explain. Mohi, this mamish ties into what we learned yesterday. If I'm not mistaken, this ties into what we learned yesterday is that Amoin Umoyov and Bavel as well, we'll see this in a moment. We're going to compare it. We're going to compare it to different. They compare different places. Now I do not think it quotes the entire Mishnah here in Yodayim, but Amoin Umoyov and Bavel as well. They were goyzer, they made a gzera, they have to be mafish trumay semaishas. However, what I told you before was not correct. There was no halacha, there was no such thing that you need to be nizhar in shvius in Amoin Umoyov and in Bavel, because this is not Eretz Yisroel. So if there's no kedushas Eretz Yisrael, l'chol hadeas, and there's no obligation to be mafish, to be nizar in the laws of shvius, where you're not allowed to store things for an extended period of time, and you're not allowed to engage in business, commerce with these items. So what do you do then? What then do you do to the fruits and vegetables in these lands in the year of shvius? And the answer is, you mafish trumos and maestros. Okay, you mafrish trumois and maisrois in the seventh year, in Eretz Yisrael, certainly b'zman shabes ha-mikdash ha-yakayam, in the year of Shvius, you are not mafrish trumois and maisrois. There's no such thing. And even today, if the land is owned by a Jew, and the produce comes from a property in Eretz Yisrael that is owned by Jews, you are not l'chol hadeos, all opinions, you do not separate trumas and maestros. We discussed yesterday from the Mabit, what happens if, and the Beis Yosef, what happens if the land is owned by Gentiles? If a non-Jew owns property in Eretz Yisrael and he grows produce and he sells it to a Jew, and the Jew then does the meruach, he finishes off the process, is there an obligation to separate trumos and maestros in the year of Shvius? So we learned yesterday, the Mabit says no, and the Beis Yosef says yes. Now, let's extend that to the neighboring lands, Bavel, Amon, and Moav. There is definitely, l'chol hadeos, there is no din Shvius in these neighboring lands. But Chazal enacted that you do separate trumos umaisros. There's no discussion. Everyone agrees that in the year, the seventh year of the cycle, in the neighboring lands of Amon Umov and the lands of Bavel, midrabanan, the Rabbanon obligated the people to separate trumos umaisros. Okay, fine, no problem. You go to the store in Amon Umov, you go to the store in Bavel, and you buy produce in the seventh year, you separate truma. Okay, truma. Meiser Rishayim. What's the next truma? What's the second Meiser? So it depends. In the first 2 years of the cycle, it's Meiser Sheni. In the year number three, it's Meiser Ani. And then year four and five, again, it's Meiser Sheni. Then it's going to be Meiser Ani. What do we do now in Shvius? What do we do in Shvius? So the Gemara tells us, the Mishnah there tells what they do in Bavel, I forgot. But it's what about in Amon Umoav? Do we separate Meiser Oni in the seventh year, or do we separate Meiser Sheni in the second year, in the year of Shvius? That is a discussion in the Mishnah, in Masechta Yodayim. This is a machlokes. I mean, the Mishnah is like a Gemara. This Mishnah is like a Gemara. The Gemara goes back and forth and wants to bring rayos, proofs, what you should separate in year number seven in Amoin and Moav. Should you separate as the second tithe? Should it be Meiser Oni, or should it be Meiser Sheni? And the Mishnah brings proofs back and forth. Here it is. Amon Moav, Mohim Mishnius. So Gozar, Rabbi Tarfoim, Sheyidu Meiser Oni. Tuma, Meiser Rishon, Meiser Oni, just like the third year and the sixth year. The Gozar, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Sheyidu Meiser Sheni. Okay, and there are three datsim, which Mishnayos, they go back and forth, bringing rayas back and forth. And in the discussion, the Mishnah there says, Omer, Rabbi Elazar ben Azayi, Rabbi Tarfon, Hariata, Kim Hanon, Kim Hane, Mamon Laniyin, Ve'ein, Ata, Elo, Kimasid, Nefashas. What are you doing? You're giving, you're a communist, he called him. He called him a communist. You're redistributing the wealth. You're giving the money to the poor and taking away the money to it's really entitled to the Kohanim. To the Iker, to Hafroshos, Chumas, and Maishos is to the Kohanim and the Levim. Is to Maishos Sheol. The Maishos Sheol is, you bring it to Yerushalayim, and what do you do in Yerushalayim? You spend the money. Either you actually eat the food there, or if you can't afford to, you convert into cash, and you go to Yerushalayim, and you spend the money. It stimulates the economy. And instead, you're taking away money that will go into the economy of the Jewish people, and you're giving it to the poor people. That's communism, the redistribution of wealth. In essence, he's calling them a communist. Okay? People who have a hard time being a parnas are all communists. Only the rich, they're capitalists. Omar lo, clothes like that. Omar lo, okay, there's a lot of bad things that go. Okay, there are a lot of bad things that go along with that. Omar Ibn Azari Rabbi Hariato Kimahanon Momon the Ein Ato Elo Kimaf Sid Nefashas. This is the way Chazal described communism. This is their term. If you want to ask someone to tell me Chazal's terminology for a communist, it's Kimahanon Momon, you're giving pleasure to the poor. You have to add some words in. You're giving pleasure to the poor with money, and where did that money come from? It came from society. You stole it from the society. You're destroying people's lives by redistributing the wealth. And then he quotes this pasuk. This pasuk, he's telling us in essence, Yikba Adam Elokim, we discussed yesterday the four terms for theft. There is Geneva, there is Gezela, there is Oyshek, and then there is communism. And communism is called Yikba, a redistribution of the wealth. That's what's called Yikba. Again, you have to find this term, a word to translate for Kovea. In the Kamasim, Shekein Kovea, Kovea means you're stealing. Ato es Hashamayim, Milohori Talumata. You are preventing the heavens from bringing down rain and tal, shlemar, because that's what this pasuk over here says, that he's going into the next pasuk. The pasuk test tells us that the consequence of denying, of not giving meiser, trumas and meisros, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu prevents the shemayim from raining and from there being blessing in this world. Hayikba, Adam, Elokim. Are you going to rob from Hashem? Ki atem koydmosi v'amart mamekir v'anucha ha-maaseh v'hatruma ha-rei sh'alidei sh'lo yidu masros yi'otru ha-shamayim by not giving maaser sheni and instead giving maaser oni, you are in violation of the law. And the pasuk, the next pasuk, which we didn't learn yet, tells us that it's a curse. When a person does not, when Klal Yisrael does not give Maaser Rishon, the Maasers correctly, then Hashem prevents the heavens from bringing down rain and causing the earth to grow and be successful. So we take away from this over here is that this Ma'am Chazal Hayikba Adam Elokim, when Klal Yisrael they say, V'amartem, Bameh Kivanucha, how can you say that? How if the word Kiva means theft. The facts are, you stole money. You caught. Kiboishes ganav ki yimotze. A person breaks into the bank and he says, this is a holdup. Okay? This is a holdup. Hand over the money. And the bank teller hands you over a bag of cash. And you walk out of the bank. And outside the bank is a police officer and says, you're under arrest. Why am I under arrest? What did I do? What did I do wrong? What did you do wrong? You held up the bank. So Klal Yisrael isn't, it's ridiculous. What do you mean, what did you do wrong? It's a ridiculous question. Isn't that what it says here in this pasuk? V'amarten, you say to me, b'mekiv anucha. What kind of crazy question is this? What do we do to you? Look, we have security cameras, we have witnesses. You commit, you it's outright theft. No, obviously the word kiveya is a sophisticated form of theft, which you fool yourself into believing is just and is upright. And what is that? Socialism, communism. If this fellow, he made $1 million, he slaved away his whole life. He borrowed money to go to college, to go to school. He went and worked as a waiter the whole night. He denied himself from sleep to pay off his loans and debt to go have enough money to go to college, and he got an education and he worked his way up for 50 years, and now finally he's making $1 million after sweat and toil. The government says, oh, you're making $1 million, so you know, let's take 75% of that and give it to the homeless people, the people who don't want to work. That society, isn't that beautiful? It's beautiful. It's only fair. It's not fair that you should make so much money. Not fair. Look at these people. They can't. Excuse me. You know, there's a history in how I got here. Nothing wrong with this. And we vote for this. People vote. Yeah, this is fine. This is good. This is correct. This is just. Who's gonna say v'amartem b'meh kivanucha? We didn't steal from you. We fool ourselves into believing that this is correct. And when you really sit back and you analyze, it's not correct. This is outright theft. A person works very, very hard to earn, to reach a position of success. That has to be taken into account. You just can't go and redistribute the wealth. But yet we fool ourselves into believing, well, it's not such a bad idea. It's not fair. Not fair that someone should make more money than me, even though he worked a lot harder than me. Obviously, you know, everything has to be calibrated. It's almost impossible to really do stuff that's only Hashem. But we take away from this Maimon Chazal that the word koveya is not the same thing as ordinary Geneva, Gezela, and Oshek. It's a different flavor. It's an entirely different flavor of Geneva. And this Maimon Chazal really, in a very interesting way, brings that this Mishnah brings it out, and really touching upon, it really says, it talks about redistribution of the wealth, which is, you know, communism and socialism and all these other types of corrupt societies. Like Rabbi Michal always tells me, in communism, what is the goal? The goal is that no one should be poor. But what is the result? Everyone is poor. That's the result of communism. Everyone is poor. The goal is no one should be poor. The Torah thoroughly rejects the entire premise of communism. Ki lo yechdal evyoin mikarev haaretz. The entire principle of communism is built upon no person should be destitute. That is the right. Cornerstone. And the Torah says, you're a bunch of fools. All you millions of people out there who subscribe to this nonsense, I'm telling you right now, it's built into the DNA of this world. Ki lo yechdal evyoin mikarev haaretz. There will be people that are destitute. Don't try to rewrite, to reconstruct the DNA of this world. That's how it is. There will be poor people. And there's a mitzvah to do chesed to the ger, the yosam, the almona, and the oni, and the evyoin, matanis levyoinim. That's the way it is. And people who want to rise up, they have to do something. They have to help themselves. Okay, the Torah is a capitalist system. My father, Zichron Levracha, was very, very big. A lot of his chedushim is, he showed over and over that the Torah's economic system is a capitalist system. It's a capitalist system, and just think about it. What exactly, you know, really, what exactly is every country has to have an economy. And every single country in the world has, there's no two countries that have the same economy. Every country has an entirely different structure. And of course, a lot of it is based upon what commodity, what where the source of wealth. Some countries have little commodities. Each country, you have oil, you have precious metals. Afghanistan, you know, in Afghanistan, they have a very precious commodity, and that's what all this is, a lot is going on, is lithium. Lithium, the most lithium in the world is found in Afghanistan, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And who makes, now the whole world is going electric. And the biggest problem of electric cars is batteries. Your cell phone is powered by a lithium battery. Where do they get lithium from?
China.
Afghanistan. Who makes the lithium batteries? Who makes them? China. So China has the most of the lithium batteries, if not all of them, come straight from China. So your car and your smartphone and everything that you have is all powered, this laptop is all powered by two things, China and Afghanistan. It's a shidduch made in heaven. They need each other desperately, and that's a lot. If you know what's going on, you pay attention to what's going on with that's why they just landed on the American base. And it was in the news because they just said the whole military just basically right now this week took over the airport that America built in Afghanistan. The Chinese, they came with all their military planes, they landed and they took over the whole airport. Why does China have a vested interest? Because you have a need to have a smartphone that has a lithium battery, and we will all be paying China for those lithium batteries, and they need the raw material. So every country has their own economy, their own commodities, and that obviously resources, and that obviously sets the stage for the type of economy they will establish. And that economy, when you're dealing with an economy, dealing with redistribution of wealth for people that are lazy, and people that unfortunately are not able to work and need to be supported by society. And we learn over here awesome ideas in the Mishnayos, how it mamish fits into the pasuk, and what the pasuk here is trying to teach us. Okay, next Chazal. We're done. We finish over here. Everything over here in this section. Let's now go to the next pasuk. Pasuk is Bame'er Atem Ne'orim. A curse. Now this is a poetic expression. Lashon Nofel Al Lashon. The Ne'er is a curse, and Ne'orim means you are cursed. Okay, look over here. The Mitzudah Sion says Bame'er Milashon Arido Uklala. The two words, basically the same exact words, Aleph Reish, an Arur. L'cha Arul Yaakov. Aleph Reish, Hey. Here the Hey drops off, and then we put a Nun in the beginning from the Arunarm. But it means you are cursed, the Osiatem Koivim, and you are robbing from me, Hagoy Klo, the entire nation. Okay, this is a very difficult pasuk, which is what we'll leave another one we'll go do together. Hashem now gives an instruction. We'll come back and pasuk test the two together. Bring the kol hamaseh obeso oitzar. Oitzar bezdin. Not today, it will take enough time. Bring all the maaseh to the oitzar, the storage house. The tedef bevesi, so that there shall be food. Teref means food in my home. Uvichon, this is the classic pasuk, test me, Hashem says. I guarantee I will open for you the windows of heaven, a blessing, until your lips are worn out from saying the word enough. Now, I was a ton of Mamar Chazal and Droshos on this to Psukim. Let's take it slow. Pasuk test in the Mitzudah is stubborn. What? Oh, Dayenu. Dayenu is a fulfillment of this bracha. Ad bli doy is ilu hotzim mitzrayim losam shvatim dayenu. What do you mean dayenu? Die. Dayenu, like dayenu. When you finish that song of saying dayenu, your lips are worn out. No, really, that's the intent.
Enough.
Ad bli doy. Enough. Die, dayenu. After every line, you sing dayenu. Die. That's exactly what you're doing. And what's so interesting is, so you would think, what is the bracha? When you show this person, the average person, so what do you think? You think you're a billionaire. You have more money than all of these people that we hear about in the news all the time. All of them put together, so much money. No, in the Dayenu, there's no money in Dayenu. It's all spiritual blessings. Elohim, we have Elohim Shvatim, Mitzray, Shabbos, Matan Torah, Har Sinai. Everything in Dayenu is Ruchnius, Shabbos, Ruchnius. And that sets the tone. Vadi Koslem Bracha Ad Bali Dai. Money? Who cares about money? Who cares about money? Some people, the whole world. Money is not everything.
It's
the only thing.
The same
Shakai,
as you said.
Shama al Yalama dies. Also ties into this. Very good. Ties into this. But yet, in the song that we sing, that Mamish is Mekayim, the Pasuk Ad Bulidai, there's no money. There's no money. It's Ruchnius. It's spiritual blessing. Hashem has bestowed upon us enormous spiritual blessings that the nations of the world don't have a clue. They don't have no clue what they're missing. They're far, far removed from the Ruchnius, the blessings of that Hashem has given us. Money, no. Somehow you have to make a parnasa also. Somehow you make a parnasa. And the miracle to make a parnasa. Okay, so let's look over
you
here.
You also have the expression here, Arubos Hashemayim.
The windows.
Which is, in this week's parsha,
the Arubos Hashemayim Niftachu. The Tehoim Rabbi, Arubos, the marble was not just from below, above. It was the Tehoim Rabbi, and it was also, good morning. And it was Lamaila Le'ela, was Shemayim, the Arubos, Parsha Snoach. The marble began, the Arubos HaShamayim Niftachu, the windows of heaven were open and the rain came down. Okay, let's go further. Let's take a look at the Mitzvah's Dalai. How it goes to the Tupsuk. Bame'era, I'm on page now 897, Pasik Tes. Bame'era, Halabavur Zaten Miku Lolim Biklala. It is because of this that you are cursed. You have not given the Kohen Levim the rightful due. Ki ein aretz gnosenes yivula. The earth is not giving its produce. Ve'im kol zeh lo tikhu musar. You're not taking musar. Ve'atem oishkim osi. So it says here that the curse is that the earth is not going to bring forth produce. Now where does it say that? Where did it say that the earth is not giving forth its produce? Where do we see that? I guess here it's pasuk yud aleph. That's what it means. It means v'go'arti l'chem bo'oichel. Okay, that's what it means. V'lo'i teshakot. What the mitzvah does is alluding to is what it says in the next pasuk. It really spells out the curse of the earth not bring forth produce. And why is this happening? It's because you're ganovim. What's the gneva? It's that you are denying my representatives. The kohanim and the levim are not getting their rightful due. Hagoy kulo ki ein echad mikem shiiten maaseh v'atumah. This is a shocking thing. To say that every single person, the entire Klal Yisrael, is guilty. How could that possibly be? Every single person. So you'll tell me it means rov, the majority. Because that's why you say Meloich al kol ha'olam kuloi. Why do you have to say kol and say kuloi? Because if it only said kuloi, it would mean the majority, 51%. So it has to say Meloich al kol. When you intensify the word kol by repeating the word twice, then it means every single last location in this world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be the Melech. Meloich. Al number one, kol ha'olam, two, kuloi. Repetition. Why? Because if you only say the word kol once, it doesn't mean everything, it means the majority. Here it says v'yosiatem koivim hagoy kuloi. It only says it once, which means the majority of the Jewish people are not giving the chumas and the maestras. Okay, that seems to lessen the intensity of the difficulty. Can you say every single person? Or the answer will be a very common answer, but Chol always mentioned, is that tolerance. It's tolerance. Even though it may be true that let's say make believe only 20% of the population are not paying their taxes. 20% of the people are not giving the tumas and the maaseros. So yet the entire nation is guilty because the 80% tolerate. They let them get away with it. If there was no tolerance for this nonsense of letting people steal, the 20% would never get away with it. The fact that they get away with it, it's only because people tolerate this behavior. That makes every single person guilty. Like by the Chet Egel, the whole Klal Yisrael suffers ad hayom hazeh from the Chet Egel, even though Chazal tell us only 3,000 from 600,000 people, or really from 2.5 million people, worship the Egel. So why should 2.5 million people suffer because of 3,000 people? The answer is tolerance. They didn't do anything about it. They let them get away with it. They just let them worship the Egel. There was silence, and they said, it's none of our business. That is unacceptable, and everyone was held... What?
Arvis,
you're responsible, and to allow 3,000 people to go and worship the Egel right after, with 40 days from receiving the Torah, Chazal say it's a kala that is mezane underneath the chuppah. If you'd go to a wedding and a kala would be mezane under the chuppah, what would you do? I don't know. I would run away.
You don't know, huh?
I would run away. That's what I would do. I would run away. But Chazal say you're not supposed to run away. You're supposed to be like a Pinchas. Take out.
Say, wait a while, wait a few minutes.
Take out your sword and kill them on the spot. I don't think anyone would do that today, but Chazal said that's what you're really supposed to do. A kala that's mezana tachas achopeth, and 2.5 million people were tolerant of such behavior, we're all guilty. And here as well, when there is corruption and people are not paying their taxes, and the people are starving, the Kohanim and the Levim are starving, this is unacceptable, and the entire nation is guilty. Pasuk Yud Aviyu
Lochem. Except for Yeshua, by Achan, one person stole, and
Choto Yisrael.
Kalakach,
exactly. Choto Yisrael. The whole Klal Yisrael sinned because one person took from the goods. Only one person. He took a few bucks, and he took a garment, a nice Babylonian garment. A Babylonian garment. Noach, it says, Kihishchis kol basar. Kihishchis kol basar is dark with mola ha'aretz chamas. So what does it mean, mola? Does it mean every single person was guilty of chamas? Every single person was corrupt? Rashi says even the animals, they live with yes. The other kinds. So what does it mean there? I don't know. This is the age old
question. More like
tolerance. Every single person.
The nation was guilty of standing by.
So that's the question. The question, what exactly did the Saudi look like? I mean, this is also the old question. You go to the Nevi'im, we learn Yechezkel, Yirmiyah, and the other Nevi'im, Yeshaya, and they describe things that are just beyond belief. Is this really, if we would go back in the time machine, and we would go into the society of Yeshaya, and Yechezkel, Yirmiyah, what would you see? So this Machlekes, we told them, this Machlekes Rishonim. Some of the Rishonim said, if we would go back in a time machine and we come into this society, we would be blown away by the righteousness of the people. It would be a society that was so beautiful, that was so amazing, that the chesed organizations and learning and Torah and Yir Shemayim, you would say, so what is Yeshaya? What is, go to different tekufas, what was Yirmiyah? What are they talking about? The answer is they were focusing on very small imperfections that are not noticeable to the naked eye, but the Nevi'im saw that these minor microscopic defects in Klal Yisrael at their time would one day mushroom and destroy Klal Yisrael. And the Musa they were giving was in order to nip it in the bud, these microscopic averos. But the big picture, everything is beautiful and fine. It's like you open up the FJJ and you see a spread of 50 chesed organizations campaigning, marketing for, you know, for their dinners and for their services. This one does this, this one does this. You have mikvois and you have yeshivas and bali tshuva, and you have for gerim, and you have for Shabbos, and stop the talking during davening, and you go through the whole newspaper, you'll come away with at least 50 organizations that are unbelievable. What a beautiful society. We know something? Some of the organizations you are intimately familiar with. Okay, there's certain and you know that this institution, it's all about COVID. There's a lot of corruption. Hanavin Yavin. From the outside, everything seems very, very nice. But we know when things that you're familiar with, why is this guy being honored? Why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? And unfortunately, Kachi Darka Shalaylam, not everything is so kosher v'yosha. Things, they may start out to be l'shem shemam, but over time, things take on a life of its own. Okay, there's government money involved, and there's this involved, and that involved, and chulu v'chulu. Listen, everything is a mix of good and bad. Nothing to complain about. You know, everyone serving Hashem, serving Klal Yisrael. But it's not as pretty as it all seems. We all know that is a fact.
Because of COVID. Could be that person was bereich mina COVID, and the COVID ran after him. So what?
Yes and no. Everything is, it's a big mix. It's a big mix. So are the Nevi'im coming to emphasize, to show, put the limelight on microscopic imperfections that would one day mushroom and destroy Klal Yisrael? Or maybe not. Maybe pshutoi kimashmoi. If we will be taken back in the time machine to this generation, there will be blood flowing in the streets. Like the way it says. So we don't know. It's a machlekes. Machlekes rishonim. When you read in the Nevi'im, there's blood flowing in the street for murder. Mamish? Is mamish blood flowing in the streets? Or no? The streets are paved with gold of chesed and Torah and Yerushalayim. The Nevi'im are focusing on minor imperfections that if they're not corrected, in 50 years from now, it will turn to blood in the street. They're giving mussar, this has to come to an end, these imperfections. You're on a lofty spiritual level, and it's very dangerous to allow this thing to... So we don't know. Maybe it's a mix of both. We don't know what exactly, when you hear about these tithings, even when you talk about Noah Adam Harishon. I once saw a fantastic writer, the Rebbe Talmud Chacham in Cleveland. Rabbi Eisenstein, maybe is that his name? Maybe he's a very famous person. Rabbi Eisenstein, I think that's what his name is. He's a menahel. His wife is also a very chashuv woman. She's in the Nahelis in Cleveland. So he wrote a very chashuv sefer, and he talks about Adam Harishon. I think he calls it Chazal. What was Adam Harishon like? If we would go back in the time machine 5,782 years and watch Adam Harishon and Chava, what would we see? So I think it's called a medrash. One opinion says we would be seeing mamish malachi hasharis. We would be blinded by the light. They would mamish malachi hasharis beyond our wildest belief. And another opinion, the Gemara says, we're looking at, I don't need to say this in a bad way, as the primitive man, barbarians, like what you see on the Flintstones. And when Chazal talk about the Eitz Hadas, it's not for us to judge. This was the Yitzir Kabash L'Kadosh Baruch Hu, but we couldn't relate to it. We could not relate to it because that's the way it is, because we're 5,782 years later. But if we would look at them, they were like, we would say they're like primitive barbarians. And the Torah is describing what was going through in their minds and things that were happening in a way that we can relate to, but this was the beginning of creation. It's like a baby. When a baby comes into this world, a baby has to be taken care of. A baby, an infant doesn't know from nothing. It doesn't know being tayyav l'rad, just wants to eat. Or what does it know from? It takes time for a human being to mature, to develop, to advance. Adam HaRishon, he was the beginning. The world didn't exist. There was nothing. What was going on in his mind? The way the Torah describes is a description we can relate to. But if we were living, we were seeing, we would see a barbarian. And other Amotana says Chas v'Shalom. If we were there, we would be mamish. We would be blinded by the spiritual light of witnessing Malachi Hasharis. So what is it? Was Adam and Chava barbarians from the mamish right out of the Flintstones? Or was it something we can't even fathom? And you can go into Chazal and you'll find Mamori Chazal supporting both opinions, telling you that the light come from the ankle, from the toe nail of Adam and Rishon would blind the world. On the other hand, you'll find Mamori Chazal that will tell you things that are very disturbing. So what is it? It's machlekes tanoim. It's mamish machlokes tonight. You got to the Eisenstein. It's very tabi chacham. He goes and he has a whole development.
Well, the Malbum mentions what he just said. Basically, he explains the same thing. He goes into great detail. He said he had to be born as a fully grown human being because otherwise the baby needs to be taken care of.
20 years old. They say he was was 20 years old when he was created.
You know everything about how to exist. And how do, you know, I'm hungry, what do I do? I mean,
we can't relate to other Marisha because number one, he had no parents.
Right.
Okay, every person is molded by their parents. There's no question about that. Number two, he lost out on like he talked about people in the Holocaust. They had no childhood. Anyone that was a teenager or was a youngster during the Holocaust, so their whole childhood was wiped out.
Right.
6 years of the Holocaust itself, plus what the years that led up to the pacha that led up to it, let's say at least 5 years before that, at least. And the aftermath, nothing settled, no one was settled for probably at least 10 years. When the Holocaust was over, it wasn't over like that. When 1944, go back to life, no one went back to life. It took a decade to figure out what is life. So anyone that was a youngster and survived the Holocaust, what do you always read about them? They had no childhood.
Right.
They had no childhood. They first came into existence when they were 25 years old. You missed out 25 years of your life. I mean, you can't. That's not a life. Your whole life is based and built on your childhood. Adam Arush had no childhood. He came into this world. He was 20 years old. So what does that mean exactly? Well, your whole person? We can't relate to that. He had no parents. He had no grandparents. He had no shviga meyer.
Yeah.
How could a person live in this world without a shviga?
That's why he lived in Ganeda.
What?
That's why he lived in Ganeda.
He was thrown out of Ganeda. They threw him out of Ganeda.
Because his wife became a shviga.
So these are all mysterious things. Next, go for trail over here. Sit over here. Havi pasuk in the mitzvot from the Muslim. Mitzvot over here. Havi us lochein havi us meata el besam. I'm reading the mitzvot. Mitzudais on page 897, Aviyu Lachin Aviyu Me'ata Eskol Hamaser, El Beis Ha'oitzer, Ha'osu Lekach Be'Beis HaMikdash. There was a special center, drop-off center for your Trumais and Maestros. Can you imagine? You have a center. Come to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash, to the drop-off Maeser Truma and Maeser center. K'moish Nema Ben Chemya, V'Teref Be'Beis, is a very unusual word to use here. Teref normally means, it means a violent grabbing of food used by Toroif Toraf Yosef, that the wolf ripped him apart. It's a vicious type of, you can imagine you go, someone invites you to a meal for Shabbos and you sit down and they put in front of you some china, some very expensive utensils and they're very chalent. And you put your hands into that burning hot chalent, and you eat it, and you run around the table grabbing every some potato kugel, and you go and you grab it off someone else's plate. Meshugana, that's what it means. Teref, food. You're boar. That's teref, food. But it means grabbing the food like a barbarian, an animal. How could the pasuk here use this word over here? The teref bebesi. What does this mean over here? It's a shocking word. How could the pasuk use this word? Teref bebesi? We have to see. Leman yehamazoin, over here it says over here, the mazel limotze la'anshe besi. Hey Mako, yehanav alavim. We have to see why the pasuk uses this very strange word to describe food. Uvichonuni ubachanu osir behamitzvah zos im ani meshalem gemul hamitzvah. Test me, Hashem says. It's the only place where Hashem says, test me. Well, see, imloy hu inyan shavua. The word imloy in Tanakh means an oath. These two words together mean I swear. Imloy. If not, it's an expression which means I swear. Kmo imloy botim rabim in Yeshayah, there are all sorts of shua. Or it's in loy mahareni nishba. She'eftach lochem b'tzchar zeh, by giving truma and maiser to the Kohen and to the Levi, the Kohen and the Levi, and bring Maaser Sheni to Yerushalayim, b'schar ze'eis arubos hashamayim, the windows of heaven, the eshvech derech bam, through the windows, lochem baracha. Why do we need the baracha to come through the windows? They have the marble. Arubos hashamayim niftachu. What's that all about? We'll have to see that later. V'u'inin guzma v'haflogo, the mizu, this is hyperbole. Ad b'li doi, v'tzen alem ha'kol kach yibu ha'tavua, ad shelo yug ha'gronetz doi, lochem lachzik es ha'kol, v'il he learns adech pshat. Ad b'li doi, we are brainwashed many times by the chazal, which is a good thing, but it's not necessarily the pshutoi shel mikro. And the pshutoi shel mikro is the ikar. Yeah, before you go to chazal is also the ikar, obviously, but it's kedai to know. Ad b'lidoy, there's no way to put it. There's so much grain, there is literally, there are no storage houses to store the tzvua. That's a bracha. I remember Rabelski, Zeche Tzag Levracha, I remember this house, there was svarim in every corner of the house. Someone gave him a safe and he told him, I literally don't have an inch in my house where to put the safe. I'm sorry, I don't. Every bookcase, every wall, I have no place to put the sefer. What can I tell you? I can't put the sefer. That's cool. That's the real bracha. Ad b'lidoy. Here talking about money. The banks don't have enough room. Okay, there aren't enough zeros in the computers, in the computer's memory storage for all the zeros and how much money you have. Okay, four knocks. It's not enough. No, it's not. Gashnius, Ruchnius, I don't have a space to put another sefer. Some shuls have this problem. They have it Sifrei Torah. They're blessed. They have people, they give Sifrei Torah. There is literally not enough room in the Aron HaKodesh to put another Sefer Torah. There's no. That is a real kiyum of what it means, ad b'lidoy. Money? Listen, we need money to survive. But money's not everything. For real. Money is not going to make you happy. The real bracha is ruchnis, and if you don't have enough room in the Aron HaKodesh, another Sefer Torah, it's pretty good. That's a pretty good bracha. That there's such a chavivus for Torah, people want to give Sefer Torah, it's a pretty good thing. There's not enough room. Ad b'lidoy, there's just not enough room to store the grain. Not enough room for another Sefer Torah. Ad b'lidoy, that's the b'shushal mekhev. I'll stop over here, Gershom. Tomorrow we'll continue discussing this more. Take a very short break. I won't talk today about. It's tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh, correct? Today is Erev Rosh Chodesh. A boy said, I know I dav by Mincha, where I dav not all the time anymore, but at least they never ever say Tachna. It's a crime. They never say Tachna. I don't know why. They never. But there's a fellow there who always loves to make jokes. And they never say. And whenever it's Erev Rosh Chodesh, he gives a clap. Rabbeisai, there's no Tachnun today. As if you said Tachnun yesterday. So there's no Tachnun today by Mincha because Erev Rosh Chodesh. I want to talk about the calendar. I want to spend some time going through the Seder of the calendar and the uniqueness of Cheshvan. Mar Cheshvan is upon us, and we'll talk about some of that after the break in 2 minutes.